I'm Phil Pringle, and welcome to the C3 Church Global Podcast. Thanks for joining us today from wherever you are in the world. C3 Church Global is a family of almost 600 churches around the world, and this podcast is all about equipping pastors and leaders to lead healthy, growing, and multiplying churches. We are Christ-centered, Spirit-powered, and Connect-driven. Every week on this podcast, you will find new and uplifting content to strengthen you, equip you, and help you lead others into a relationship with Christ. You'll find a mix of devotionals that build your faith and your relationship with Christ, as well as rich and empowering conversations with leaders and friends in ministry from around the world. We also bring inspiring testimonies and updates from our pastors and churches throughout the C3 movement on the 64 nations that we're present in. Here's this week's podcast.
Hello and welcome to this week's C3 Church Global Podcast. My name is Phil Hubbard. This week we start a two-part series on the topic of discipleship. So here is episode one of this discussion with Simon McIntyre and Mark Kelsey.
How are you both? How are you, Mark?
I'm very well, Hubby. Good to see you. Good to see you, Simon.
Good to see you, Mark. Good to see you, Phil.
Very good. Great to have you both. And so for all the listeners out there, today, this podcast, we're going to be talking around the topic of discipleship. The question I think sometimes is that we're pondering as pastors and leaders is what does that mean? Recently, Simon's written an article around discipleship and this topic. So I might first and foremost just turn to you, Simon, just for your thoughts, because I know you've had some recent ponderings on the topic.
Okay. All right. Well, look, I'll dive in and see where we go. And Mark can correct as I walk.
Not likely.
So I'm going to start off with a concern rather than a comment. My concern is that the topic discipleship, which is a hot topic, and rightly so, is going to become another trend that will pass, and then will default to a less inconvenient Western Christianity. That's my concern.
Yeah.
Because I don't see discipleship as an adjunct. To me, it's fundamental, it's foundational,
yeah,
and it's the purpose of the preaching of the gospel. If we're to take Matthew 28 for what it says, go into all the world, preach the gospel, you know, and make disciples. We know that, and people are listening know the scripture, and it's instructive that it's the last thing that Jesus said, from that perspective. So that to me that matters. So I don't think we're doing it right, but I think we're doing our best. I don't think I'm doing it better. I'm not certainly saying that I know what we should do, because I think it's quite an awkward process to figure it out. Some big sort of points would be spiritual formation is, once again, it's largely individually oriented. And because of that, it sounds like another version of the better me. It's great stuff in it. It's got truth in it. It's got stuff that helps every one of us. And I would assume that most of us actually employ some of its techniques and some of its ideas, which is wonderful. So this is not a sideswipe. But the problem is that it's more located toward the individual rather than a group. Interestingly, and I think I said this to you, Phil, and it's quite an interesting point, Jesus never discipled one-on-one. He addressed people one-on-one, he spoke to people one-on-one, but his discipling was never done one-on-one. He always discipled in groups. And I think there are some sociological dynamics around that, and also some jolly good time management around that. So I'm not convinced that spiritual formation really covers what discipleship is. So mm-hmm. If I could say it simplistically, discipleship is helping people to become like Jesus.
Yes.
And our source material for discipleship is glaring at us out of the Gospels. And most notably, Matthew was the most well-read and most popular gospel in the early church. It was the one that has spent more energy and time on discipleship than all the others. So if you just look at Matthew 5, 6, and 7, if we can figure that out, that is utterly transformational. It's the law at a new level, which is basically what Jesus was saying. And it's got the capacity of transforming people's lives to such an extent that they become an attraction, even if they're despised and hated, which is one of those dynamics the gospel does raise for us. So they're my kind of big thoughts, that it becomes a trend, and then it stops becoming a trend. Like prayer can be a trend, and these are good trends, by the way. I'm not suggesting they're not good, but I don't think that discipleship should be another trend. And I've talked with pastors about this, and I don't have any smart answers at the moment about some of this. You basically can't disciple from a pulpit. Jesus taught the crowds, but he discipled the 12. The difference is massive. The crowds were fickle. Most of them walked out on him. Maybe some of them came back in the 3 and the 5,000 in Acts, early chapters of Acts. But most of his discipling was done in the small groups where people's lives were challenged at the deepest fundamental core and their selfishness. And I think that's the big one. Their self-orientation's challenged. And that's a body blow to our humanity. And that's why I wonder if a lot of people want to be discipled, because it's going to point out their sin, their shortcomings, their lack of kindness. I even think some of the leaders that have fallen in the last number of years have probably never been discipled, because they've continued all these years to be angry men. Mm. And anger is a discipleship issue. It's not an unfortunate human trait, although it's a... So that's probably all I'm going to say today.
Okay. Well, thanks for coming.
I can smell my dinner being with you.
I mean, it's interesting that you talk about discipleship as a trend, because obviously, like you mentioned, Jesus' last statement, it's his command to us is to go and make disciples. And it's interesting because if you go back and ask pastors over the multiple generations before us, they'd all probably still talk about discipleship as, what we're called to do. It just seems like everyone's always looking for a new system or a new structure or a new way of doing things, and maybe out of, the modern, last 20, 30, 40 years of church life, which, maybe to a certain extent has become very event-driven, at least in kind of our circles and styles of, charismatic/Pentecostal churches, where maybe that pendulum's swinging back, and so it's almost like, oh, well, we need to go back to discipleship. But were we always discipling? We were just doing it in a different way. Are they saying spiritual formation and, like you said, Simon, one-on-one discipleship is something different to what we were doing previously? So, like, Mark, I know this has been a big thing on your heart for the last couple of years. So where do you land on discipleship and how it's looking in the modern church? And as you've traveled around our movement, what it's looking like?
Yeah, look, I 100% agree with Simon on all those. Well, first of all, on the concern, and his concern I share as well, in terms of hopefully it's not just a trend. I think if we can embed in it long enough and the correct way, from it back to a biblical perspective, I think the impact will be hopefully long-lasting and significant. I think that's part of the thing. We have had an attractional church model. And I think the challenge to the Western church is it rediscovering what biblical discipleship and biblical cultural framework actually looks like. And can it's so embedded the wrong way. I think voices like Dallas Willard and John Mark Comer have spoken into the space for a while, particularly Dallas Willard. And he says basically the Western church has become about a belief and ritual and the whole thing of the practice of formation into Christoform, into Christ, has basically been lost. But if we can return to that, and if the numbers can be great enough, the impact of that on society just naturally will be profound. Yeah. So I think the shift, and look, I also that lately there's been this tension between, okay, is it about leadership development or is it about spiritual formation? Are those opposing things? I actually think it's both, because I think the combination of leadership development and spiritual formation is a good balance, because leadership development really, and I think Jesus did that. Luke 4, his mission was announced, but by Luke 5, he's recruiting the disciples. But by Luke 9 and 10, he's actually multiplying those disciples and creating and developing leaders and funnily enough, giving them jobs. So spiritual formation outside of a role, outside of the pressure of responsibility, really, to Simon's point, is just about self-focus. I love this quote. Robert Mulholland said, a discipleship is a process of being formed into the image of Christ for the sake of others. I think it's this combination of serving and spiritual formation that some, and it's messy. I don't think we're going to come to this perfect. If we start looking for methodologies, I think we'll get it wrong straight away, because I think it's not about methodology. It really is about discovering the core biblical message within Jesus. I think it's really looking to the life of Jesus and not just what he did from a cosmic level, which was, you know, the crucifixion, resurrection, ascension, but from a lifestyle level. How did he do this? What was his focus? And he was somehow, he was the master of, he achieved what he needed to achieve from a divine perspective, but he also showed us the way to do it. And I think in this conversation, it's really about looking at the model of Jesus in that space. Yeah.
Hey, everyone. I believe in the local church. Ever since we started our church way back in 1980, we've been planting churches all around the world, in major cities, villages, towns. And we have seen ourselves plant churches now in over 60 nations in the earth. Last year, we planned to plant 20 churches, and we ended up planting 45. This year, we're going to plant another 42 churches. I'd like to invite you to become a partner with us in this grand plan that God has called us to, planting his magnificent church all around the world. It's not an inexpensive exercise to plant churches. It costs a lot to support pastors when they're just starting out, and their families and their structures, their circumstances, renting houses, needing a car. And in some of these places, they're very poor, and we want to help them rise up and plant great churches in their nations. You can help us by jumping over to our website, C3 Church Global, and there you will find a giving section, and you can give towards helping us plant churches all around the world. I'm praying for you that as you give, the blessing of God will rest upon your life in abundance. In Jesus' name, God bless you.
I love what you said there, Mark, because I feel like that's the pendulum that we're on at the moment. It's almost like out of that attractive, you know, style church and out of a leadership concept that I think has been a focus for a while. It's that swing back with voices like John Mark Comer and like Dallas Willard, who have been such a blessing to the kingdom over the last couple of years. But there's that swing back from leadership to my spiritual formation.
Yes.
But then, like you're saying, Simon, that lends itself towards discipleship being a very one-on-one thing, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I've sort of read some stuff and wondered why he did it in crowds and not just as individuals. But there's something about a crowd dynamic that keeps everybody accountable to each other. Mm. That, you know, and it's interesting that you can say things in a group that end up being very pointed to an individual. And they may be very real, but it somehow both softens the blow and makes you more accountable long term, the fact that it's more than just one. You know, I was just thinking, this is on the topic, I'm not veering off the topic. Mark and I were discipled because, and it was all done in life. Mm. And that was our advantage in the early years back in Sydney, is that our discipleship was done in homes, on holidays, on Mondays off. And we just lived around each other. And Phil, who's always been a great leader, he wouldn't have sat down and said, I'm going to disciple these two brats and see what I can make of them. It was part of our life, wasn't it, Mark?
It was. And it was so, like you said, naturally embedded in our lifestyle that we almost didn't know it was happening. And I don't think we even used the word discipleship. No. I mean, in fact, the previous decade, discipling and discipleship was actually a bad word, in the sense that it was used as a weapon against people because it was actually control of people's behavior. So I don't think we didn't even try to describe it. It did, and it happened.
Yeah, it happened. And the teaching in life, Phil's never, ever wanted to sit down and disciple a person direct like that. He would rather do it on the run. Come with me and see what I do.
Well, yeah, and that's a Jesus concept, isn't it? I mean, that's a come follow me idea.
Yes.
You know, and you ask somebody today what discipleship looks like, and it's probably like, oh, I want someone to sit down with me, set me some goals, set me some personal kind of accountabilities, and I want to work on this, this, and this. But, you know, you talk to any one of the disciples about their discipleship process with Jesus, and it was walking down the dusty road, it was having lunch together, it was going to that guy's house and then going to that guy's house, and, you know, it wouldn't have looked like, apart from some very rare occasions, they would tell you that their walk with Jesus was with at least 11 other guys. You know, it wasn't Jesus one-on-one sitting and having a chat, was it?
No.
And I think the discovery of that, what you just described, Phil, was there's been a fresh discovery of the meal. I think there's been a fresh discovery of the table, of hospitality. And the amazing thing is it's in different frameworks. It's in the framework we're talking about now, which is discipleship, but it's also it's coming out in the context of evangelism. So, I mean, you know, you've heard the phrase about Jesus in the book of Luke. Jesus had over 50 meals, and his, you know, his mission, you know, the two great scriptures, Jesus came to seek and save the lost, but then he came eating and drinking. So his mission was to seek and save the lost, but his method was eating. And the context, I think discipleship is as much about context as it is about methodology and what have you. And that's why I think that the overemphasis on leadership, which is in the last 10 or 15 years, has really been a top-down thing. Basically, I lead, you serve. Has lost the art, I think, of the nuance of discipleship and really the formation of those people in that context. Because if you take spiritual formation and the care of those individuals in that team out, basically you've got controlling leadership. And then I think that's where a lot of it has come unstuck, where the people at the end of that continuum have just felt used and abused, when really Jesus didn't do that. He put pressure on them. He sent them out into very challenging circumstances. But at the end of the day, it was for them, and he knew they were going to be carrying on the mission, and he was going to leave. And I think we've got to have that same attitude of, we're not going to be here forever. So we've got to build cultures and momentums in such a way that we're leaving healthy disciples who can then disciple other healthy disciples at the end of our efforts. Not perfectly, but certainly that should be the aim.
Yes, and that's where that, like you were saying, the combination of spiritual formation and leadership, because the spiritual formation concept can just seem like I'm sitting on my favorite chair in my living room with my Bible and a coffee and talking with Jesus and having my prayer time, and I'm forming myself. But like you said, that definition of discipleship being making disciples who make disciples is then that leadership thing on top of that, where you are then going on to the longevity of our discipleship, and the legacy of our discipleship is that we go on to make more disciples.
Yeah, that's certainly the aim. There's a interesting book called The Critical Journey, and it talks about the six stages of formation, essentially. And the first three stages, interesting, is stage three is basically where you are part of a team in the church and you're serving, what have you. And in many cases, churches, that's the end of the journey. But then it talks about that everyone at that point hits a wall, and there's a deep growth wall in all of us that isn't satisfied by the fact that we're joining a team and serving. There's actually a deeper growth and a deeper work to take place. And until we get into that second half of the journey where true change begins to take place, then spiritual formation really isn't happening. And I think, once again, it's a beautiful connection of the leadership formation and spiritual formation, is that they actually work together. Because I think some of the things that happen in church life, you know, we can't build churches that are void of imperfection and offense and pressures and imperfect leaders, but that's all part of the package, and it's how we handle those things rather than trying to create perfect churches and perfect environments that I think are part of the journey.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, Simon, do you think that, I mean, the modus operandi of church and kind of creating services and structures and leaders, do you think that that's where the getting stuck in a trend comes from? Is it because we kind of get stuck in the system of doing church where the discipleship has just been around forming people to fulfill the goal of church as the organization?
Yeah, I think I don't read it cynically. I think it's just a practical application of our structures. Our church Sunday meetings, to be a great experience, require a whole lot of volunteers. So we grid discipleship through that necessity. And I think, like Mark says, is absolutely correct. I've not heard anybody else say it. I believe it, but I've never heard it said, is that the way we do church is ultimately unsatisfying, because people will serve for 20 years and it does nothing more than them doing that for 20 years. And it doesn't necessarily make them a more vibrant Jesus follower, so that in their families and in their work scenarios, they actually have positive influence. And so I think the way we do church hinders the process of discipleship. And pastors do. Pastors see it and they believe in it. But their church Sunday structure is so sacrosanct that they just add it on. They don't realize it might require a renovation. And I think we should still preach the word of God publicly. That's not my point. Mm-hmm. Anybody thought I was, you know, deconstructing the church, they'd have another thing coming. But I'm not. I'm just trying to figure out how we construct it properly. And how does a pastor disciple people if not in small groups? And how do you do that without other people feeling left out and, you know, disenfranchised? And Jesus faced all of that. Jesus chose his disciples. Nobody came to him and said, "Will you disciple me?" Mm-hmm. And once or twice in my life, it's not been much, once or twice, people have said, "Will you disciple me?" It's an abject failure, because they want to be discipled in technique. Yeah. But Jesus wants to disciple in attitude. And to be Christ-like is not a technique. It's a way of doing life.
Yeah.
It's a way of selfless, cross-oriented living.
Yeah.
And I look, you know, we're Pentecostals and happily so. And we've always reveled on the victory of the cross and utterly forgotten the example of the cross.
Yeah,
but the example of the cross lives with us more than the actual, you know, like eschatological victory of the cross, which still has its outworkings in time and in the resurrection. So I'm wondering, how can a pastor and any of us disciple so it's not just one-on-one and just advice? Yeah. I gave a person some advice the other day, and I I walked away from it so mad because I doubt they'll do what I said. And I thought, I'm going to charge. If you want advice, I'm going to charge you $1,000 for my advice. You know why? Then you'll go and do it. Yeah. But that's not really my point. I don't need yeah. that. It's more that it's not an advice service, discipling. It's a brutalization of the fondness of your own humanity. Because yeah. he rebuked them publicly. He rebuked them in front of each other. We never do that. We're taught not to do that. We say that, you know, that offends and hurts a person. That was the point. They were meant to be offended because they were living wrong. They were thinking like Satan or the world.
Yeah. I read that scripture yesterday. It's crazy, isn't it? The Matthew 16. You know? Great.
When you spoke to Peter.
Yeah, spoke to Peter. I'm like, that's crazy.
Can you imagine that?
Oh, my gosh. Especially after such a height, like two or three verses earlier where he was,
I'm going to build my church.
Then he really saw who Jesus was.
Exactly. Oh, my gosh. Because I think one of the words that's been used now, and you know, obviously people like John Mark Comer using it as well as Willard, that the word apprentice, and it could be perhaps a more understandable or usable word for the word disciple. Because I think we've so spiritualized that word. I think there's so many different definitions that I think we've actually lost the impact and meaning of it. But really, Jesus apprenticed. He was a rabbi, and he apprenticed 12. Students to him, and it was an honor for them to be asked and to be accepted, of course they had to respond accordingly. I think one of the things that happened too is that I have this little theory, and I could be wrong, is that, you know, Jesus was expecting them to then apprentice others and to choose others. And if you read Luke 9, there are all these frustrating examples of Jesus engaging with the disciples. You know, James and John wanting to call down fire on these villages that are rejecting them, etc. And then I think Jesus just gets a bit over it. And by Luke 10, he then appoints the 72. It's like he sort of bypassed the 12 and said, because what I think what happens in church life is that once we're in, we begin to create this inner circle. And exclusivism begins to take over, whereas apprenticeship and discipleship is the exact opposite. When we're included, we then need to include others in the journey of life. And so he then chose the 72, obviously by name, the fact he knew them by name. And I'm sure the 12 were going, who are these guys? You know, where did they come from? And my little theory is that they should have chosen six each to disciple. But I think coming back to the small group, that's why there is a revival and recovery of the table, of small group, of those community connections, which I think really there's no other context, like Simon was saying.
We hope you're enjoying this episode of the C3 Church Global Podcast. Just a reminder that this is episode one of a two-part series on the topic of discipleship. So make sure to subscribe to our YouTube and follow us on Apple and Spotify podcasts for the release of episode two.
Hey, thanks so much for joining us today. Check out more content on the C3 Church Global Instagram and YouTube page. C3 is a movement of many hundreds of churches around the world, Christ-centered, Spirit-powered, and connect-driven. So wherever you are around the world, I encourage you to find a C3 church near you. See you again soon.